I call the regular meeting of the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors to order. We will now begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by the moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. All righty, now we'll adopt the agenda for the meeting. Are there any recommended changes or other updates?
There's one item I added to the green copy of agenda that everyone in the audience has. It's the number 10 unfinished business. VRA financing was approved earlier this week for the Zion Crossroads Water Project, so we need to give you those some numbers off there on what the current rates are. And it's the numbers we told you last time about the 15-year, 20-year, and 25-year options for all the different levels. So we'll have that for you tonight. Yeah, we sent you that. Eric sent it out the other day, but we need to brief you on that because you'll have to give us some direction for next meeting because the 21st you'll have to vote on which way to be in the pool.
Okay. All right. Anyone want to make the motion?
I move that we adopt the agenda.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. Weaver. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr. Nichols?
So a few things to report. There's a bunch of stuff going on, that's for sure. The Finance Department, it was again awarded the Certificate of Achievement for Excellence in Financial Reporting. That comes from the Government Finance Officers Association, and it's the highest form of recognition they provide. And it's based on the CAFR and the credibility of that CAFR and the openness of the financial reporting and the lack of errors in that. So we appreciate the hard work by Finance Department and receive that award again this year. Business appreciation event was held Monday night at Cunningham Creek Winery. Great event. There was over 100 people there and more representing about 50 businesses. And the EDA, the Chamber, and the Florida other Fluvanna Economic Development Partners helped sponsor that. Antioch Brewery actually came out and featured their new beers, and it was really good.
Their first event.
Yeah, it was their first event, right. They're our first nano brewery, but they give a sneak peek of their products, and it was actually quite good. They had three different types of beers there that that folks tried out, and seemed to be quite successful on all accounts.
Right now it's being made with well water, as I understand.
Is it?
Is that
oh,
right?
My gosh. I hope they stay doing that.
When I asked them if they were playing no movie.
But they say the taste is so much better with that well water and all.
Mm. Well, that's what they said. They said, we're not leaving because we love the water that we have.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
And here's some of the photos from that event. You can see the big packed room and lots of folks having a good time, and the food was good, and this is Antioch Brewing, the team there, mm-hmm. And then of course in the Cunningham Creek Winery, their spaces are really spectacular and very comfortable. They've got great outside patios. That's where we did the staff picnic and award ceremony last fall. And then the signage we talked about before that Mr. Stevens had briefed you about, that one of the signs is up there. Anthony Tanner on our staff made the signpost and base, welded that together, and then we had these signs made on there. So they're up on the front steps and can move out of the way for pictures and things like that. But it should get people directed to the side where the handicap entrance is, instead of even when you come out the door, since the sign will be right in front of you, it'll make you think about it. Now we're still working on the design for the side benches. In the meantime, the side benches, there's one over here to the left and one over here to the right. They're off the picture. So those benches there to keep it from falling off. They're just flat benches. But he'll work with the Historical Society to design those types of benches that he showed you from the Bremo Plantation.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah. Right, to put those there so they're period correct, but also so they're safe so somebody's not falling off at night. The job fair was held last Friday, and there were 42 job seekers that came in. We've actually had some applications already for county jobs from those folks, 22 different employers, and the Virginia Employment Commission thought it was a very successful event. And we'll plan on doing this a couple times a year. The next one will take place in the fall this year. Summer reading off to a great start, like always, at the library. The library has lots of events and things going on. You can see the different types of events they've they've had already in the last 3 or 4 weeks. And you can see the kids and the moms and the dads that are out participating in all these types of events. Liz McIver, one of the library staff, was helpful in putting that summer program together. And it's a big hit every year. Blue Ridge Balloon is our spotlight on business. If you've ever seen balloons over Pleasant Grove Park, if you haven't seen a balloon over Pleasant Grove Park, I'd be surprised, but they're out there quite a bit in the spring and summer and early fall, and of course around the Charlottesville area as well. But Blue Ridge Balloon is a local business that has a great safety track record, no accidents, and that's a good thing when you're up in a balloon.
Where did they land?
I'm not sure where they do. I've seen them land at Pleasant Grove Park.
They go up and land at the same place?
No, I'm not sure. Not all the time, I would assume.
Sure. Jason, do you know?
Not with the wind. No,
they coordinate with the landowner, and it's got to be the right weather, perfect weather, no wind.
Coordinate with the landowner, but if the wind's blowing the wrong way, they can coordinate all they want to, can't they?
We've probably seen a lot more Pleasant Grove.
Hey, buddy, look out, here I come.
Yeah, coordinated or not.
They have a ground crew, and the ground crew will follow and pick them up.
Oh, okay. So if they're crashing.
Well, no, just to pick
quick
them
emergency.
Up.
Just to call and pick them up and get the balloon and the
kind of like storm chasers.
Yeah.
Folding that balloon up in the gondola and getting it back on the truck is.
Cool. I think that'd be great.
It is cool. And I actually checked online. Their prices are very reasonable.
I've been wanting to go up in one.
I'm surprised you have to ask that question. Wasn't that standard form of transportation back in the day?
Oh.
Almost.
Boom, boom, boom.
That was the best.
We're kicking off again the Columbia, we're calling it the Columbia Renewal Task Force. It's going to be Monday, May 19th. And I'm sorry, Monday, June 19th. Yeah, that would have been a long time ago. 7 o'clock at the St. Joseph's Parish Fellowship Hall in Columbia. So I've sent notices out to all the prior members and a bunch more folks. We've put flyers in the post office in Fork Union in Columbia at the library or the social services, community center, a whole bunch of other places. And then, of course, it's online. And so we'll be trying to continue to get notice out to folks and see what that first meeting does is on who will show. And then we're going to create a draft for a task force charter to bring to the board at a subsequent meeting to say, here's what the group would like to work on. And then you all can bless that charter so we can move forward. And if you haven't seen the towers yet, the towers have been stacked at both CVEC site up on Highway 15 and at Columbia School. They've been stacked to their 300-foot level. And you can see the radio project is moving right along. Final system cutover is expected to be the third week of August, and then a follow-up reliability test. But a lot of happy people looking forward to the completion of this project as a huge safety improvement for our first responders and sheriff's office and fire and rescue.
That was on TV, wasn't it? Somebody said they had seen something about that.
Oh, that's right. I sent them to you. Yeah, they called. They did call. Yeah. So, and then firefighter one class has been ongoing. They used Albemarle's burn building. That was on last Saturday. Chief Constantino at the Lake Monticello Fire Department is the one who's teaching those classes. But that building that they use there is similar to what the Fire Rescue Association aims to try to do here through grant funding, the one near the Fork Union Community Center. And so we'll see if that comes to fruition or not. It'd be great to have a facility here and not have to have our firefighters go so far out of the county to be able to go to training and to stay trained up and get new firefighters trained. The new roundabout at 618 and 53 up by Effort Baptist Church, the design public hearing is Tuesday, June 13th, 4:30 to 6:30 at the library. And they don't run the public hearing exactly like a public hearing like you're used to. It's really more a public forum where they take feedback from folks. It's not like a formal hearing. But they will have the maps and drawings and everything there and VDOT folks to be able to answer questions. So that's been widely publicized in the papers and online. But looking forward to that one. And that construction is actually, I think, tentatively planned for 2019, completion in 2019. The old Columbia Town Hall in the left of your picture is no longer. The Archdiocese has already done the construction, the destruction contract. And so it's been demolished. This was a picture on the right of the screen. That picture was from yesterday. And so it'll be cleared off that site pretty soon. I'm hoping to see four more pieces of property look very similar to that within the next few months. New deputy treasurer has been hired, Lori Roberts, who comes to us from the local area and has lots of great experience in administration and finance services and things with companies she's been with. Started on June 1st at the treasurer's office, and it's been a great addition already. And then, Mr. Weaver, you talked about the unassigned fund balance.
Yes.
So Marty Brookhart created a report, and it's just part of your package all the time now, like your BOS contingency and the CRM reports. It's in your package, and this is just a picture of what it looks like. So it shows at the end of last year, that was the fund balance, and then any changes to fund balance since then up to current date, and then the final fund balance for current unassigned fund balance. So anytime you approve a change to something, you'll see it on here. This will just be a running report throughout the year.
Thank you.
Oh, shoot, hit the wrong button, sorry. That was it. Okay, so now your regular meeting schedule for this month still, you've got the 7 o'clock meeting on June 21st, just a regular meeting with your public hearings. But remember, in the month of July, just one meeting. It's on Wednesday, July 5th at 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock. And you won't be here for the 21st?
The 21st, I will be out of town. I've got a meeting.
Okay, and there's about other five public hearings that night, Kelly? Okay, so just when the package comes out the week before, if there's any issues or questions, just holler, please. But anyway, so then back on schedule in August, regular schedule in August. On the one before?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good, thanks. So one other thing. We heard about a bed and breakfast that was in Flavanna County. That's part of the legislature, the end of it. And we didn't know there was a bed and breakfast in Flavanna County. And I was excited because I thought we were going to actually have some lodging. Found out it wasn't really a traditional bed and breakfast as you normally would think, but was a Airbnb that's called a bed and breakfast. And when the staff started doing some research on it, they found that there's about 23 or 24 of them. Was it, Jason? Kelly found it, I guess. Almost 25 Airbnb folks that do rentals in our community. Now, the reason I bring it up is because A, we didn't know that, and B, the state legislature adopted some new legislation this year. I think Albemarle County had requested it, but the legislation is part of a longer state code section, but it added this small section at the bottom. And to make it more brief, I'll pull up just this part in yellow. Any locality may, by ordinance, establish a short-term rental registry and require operators within the locality to register annually. And then at the bottom, nothing herein shall be construed to prohibit, limit, or otherwise supersede existing local authority to regulate the short-term rental property through general land use and zoning authority. Now, I don't think we have anything in our codes now about short-term rental use, and we may not need anything, but because it came up, because someone asked about it, and because the new law has been, the new section of the code has been adopted, I want to at least bring it to your attention and start a dialogue.
Charlottesville's been debating that also.
Yeah, Charlottesville has a little bit different aim, though, because they have a lot of rules for lodging because they've had, because they're a city and they can
And it wants some taxes, too.
Albemarle County, definitely. Yeah, in our case, I don't know if taxes are the appropriate part, but I guess the question is, like, in my neighborhood, in Nahor Village, you know, the old folks home where the 55 and over community where I live. If my neighbor wants to start renting out their house, that may be not allowed by the covenants of our homeowner association. But what if I don't have a homeowner association? Can you just start doing that? I don't know.
Are they renting out like nightly or by
yes,
the month?
Yes, all of the above.
All of the above? Yeah.
Short-term rental.
Short-term, I mean,
is normally defined as less than 30 days.
30 days, right.
Well, I mean, I hate to say this, but I was just sitting here thinking to myself, the gentleman that has the canine school, that if we could get a listing of those, these could be things that we give to him and those guys coming in from Maryland or something
well, for,
of that nature.
For any folks, we've got businesses we're working with now that they have to stay either at Zion Crossroads or
right.
in Charlottesville. And The one we found the other last week, one of the staff found, was actually got rave reviews on Facebook the site about this their Airbnb, but it happened to be in a subdivision that I was just flabbergasted that there was a B&B in that subdivision, and then we found out it was an Airbnb where they just do like short-term rentals. And it's less than, well, it's room or the entire house, but again, it's shorter term. I think the state law is that bed and breakfasts have to be 15 rooms or less, but the Airbnb, which is these short-term rentals, are a little different. And anyway,
what about the place up here, 1717, up there on 15? Isn't that a bed and breakfast?
If it is, didn't know that.
Used to be 1828 or something.
I thought the last one in our county closed.
No,
right here in the corner.
2 years ago.
Not Hayden Mark. Yeah, right on the corner. Yeah. It says 1776 or 1777. You go down in there. I thought.
Not that I know of, man. But in any case, we don't have any kind of knowledge of it or look at it or.
Doesn't make any difference, really.
I don't know. If you lived in a Lake Monticello, is
what HOA kind of
well yeah, HOA ain't allowed there.
That's
but
the problem, I guess.
Let's think of Taylor Ridge. You know, just up on 53. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that an okay thing? Just people come in and rent the house out in the neighborhood? Or
why not?
I'm asking you.
That's what I'm saying.
Well, there are different ways that people control these things. Some localities, like Culpeper, for example, considers a B&B to be a residential use. So it has to be in a single-family residence. Airbnb is a little different, of course, but others consider it to be a commercial use. And limited to Charlottesville, for example, is limited to... It's permitted in business commercial zones. It's also permitted under some circumstances in residential zones. Charlottesville's got some pretty strict limitations on it. But there is a philosophical question that Mr. Weaver just asked, and that is, if somebody's living there, does it really make a difference if they're living there for a week or a weekend or a month or 6 months or whatever, what difference does it make? I live next to a B&B, and it's you could tell there's somebody there because it's a car you don't recognize.
But that's a licensed business through the State Corporation Commission and
yeah, apparently
things like that.
And but the question is, do you care?
Isn't it ultimately the bureaucracy of that is it gets back to maybe taxes, some sort of taxes they're going to put on these people, isn't that?
The two things that come up to mind for me all the time is the relative safety and habitability of that place to do that thing. I don't know what regulations there are or who regulates an Airbnb facility in the Commonwealth, because we just never faced the issue before. That's the first thing. The second thing is taxing, because it's a business. And I don't know that either of those are a problem or appropriate to discuss, but because the law changed this year, because we got notified there was a bed and breakfast in our community, we thought we were excited because we thought it was like a bed and breakfast, you know, a regular of commercial facility.
I thought a bed and breakfast required a special use permit.
They probably do. Mm-hmm. And that's why, one of the reasons I was excited, because, oh, by the way, I didn't want somebody to have a problem after the fact when they're already in business and they spent lots of money and done stuff. Right. And this one is in a residential neighborhood, residential subdivision, that I was really surprised that there would be a bed and breakfast in that neighborhood. But in any case, that's why I bring it up.
I always thought that should be a by right use, but I think it still requires a permit.
I think so, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, the whole Airbnb thing is that they're basically just providing a place for somebody to spend a night, typically something along those lines.
Right. Except they're making money off it.
Right, no.
Well, more power to them.
In areas where there's hospitality taxes, such as New York and larger cities, that's become a big problem because people are renting out their rooms, and, you know, instead of the hotel getting $400 or $300 a night or whatever the case may be, the landowners or the tenants getting it. And so the hotel associations have all complained because they're losing business, and then the local governments have complained because they're losing taxes. I don't know that that's really applicable to what's happening here, but if we're asking somebody to register, that's not necessarily a huge imposition, and maybe at least gives us a sense. But I don't think it's going to be something that's going to be complied to very carefully. You know,
It may be because it's free advertising.
Well, that's the whole purpose of the business
registration would be advertising on our website and groups and functions. And if we know about them, we can tell other businesses about them.
I don't know that I would advertise an Airbnb as a bed and breakfast.
No. I don't know how you would advertise for that, but a whole range of businesses.
I mean, people go to Airbnb because they know they're going to get a cheap room. That's
true.
Yeah. And VRBO, I mean, things like that, those are all websites that provide vacation rentals by owner.
One of the things about this whole industry is, I think it's so new that it's still shaking down. Mm-hmm. There's a commercial on TV, for example, I saw the other day, that is talking about, you know, renting a hotel and all this kind of stuff. And it has this one scene where it says, you don't have to worry about owners walking around in their underwear, and they got this fat guy in his underwear. So I've heard stories like that. And so I think some of that, you know, we just don't really quite know all the problems with it. But, you know, it would give us another alternative for somebody to use his house that way.
Well, like I said, I'd like to be able to have a list so that when these businesses come in here, or people come in to use our businesses, and we say, well, the closest place you got to stay is Best Western at Louisa.
Yeah, we're sending
I'm
them
not trying
the county
to take
to
one
stay.
Business away from them, money. But yeah. If we can find a place for them to stay here in the county, then they eat here in the county.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a lot of merit to that, but again, you all have to direct the staff on which way you want us to look at this or not look at it. So
it's a very fluid market, so you're going to have people coming in and out of it all the time.
Yeah, and I don't know that... I don't know how you, well, never mind, I'll wait.
Well, I guess the question is, do we want to put this on the agenda to discuss further, or do we just not want to put it on? That's really the question that's been asked.
That's really the question.
Have you had any problems with it?
Nope.
Well, then, just leave people alone.
My only comeback to that is that every time we do that, we're just saying that you guys who got away with it, it's okay, but you guys, now that we got a new rule, we're going to make you do it this way. And I think we should really work on being consistent, but I'll move whichever way the board wants. I'm just bringing it up.
Fred, you got ready to say something.
Well, what I was going to say was one thing you might want to do, might want to think about is ask the staff to give you a report as to the current status of things and whether they view that there's any need for any encouragement, regulation, whatever it might be.
Yeah, I don't even know if there's a state requirement. I mean, I just don't, because we just opened this can up this last week, and I don't know if they have to be listed through the State Corporation Commission or anything. There may not be, and maybe it's okay.
So we should find out what's required or not required?
I would think so.
Yeah.
Mr. Weaver, what do you think?
Well, you can find out if ain't any laws there. I mean,
we definitely want to be within there.
Yeah.
And if we've identified how many?
23 or 24.
Yeah, then I think we should have some information. We should look back.
We'll take a look, because honestly, I just don't know the answers. All I know is that there was new legislation this year that was on the list of stuff that came up because it was prominent. And then this came up last week with this, a new bed and breakfast. And anyway, okay, we'll take a look at it and just come back
with
information. And then, so a reminder, just one July meeting, 4 o'clock and 7 o'clock, and then back on regular schedule in August. Any questions I can answer for the board?
Anyone?
No.
Thank you, sir. All righty. We will now open the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium, state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on the topic and direct it to the board. Is there anyone wishing to speak to the board at this time? Stevens, I thought you were jumping up and come talk to us.
He was going to.
Okay. Seeing no one wishing to speak, we will now close the first round of public comments. Next thing up is public hearings, which we have none. So we will go to action matters at 7. We will start with tab W,
FY18 Arts Grant Budget Transfer from Board of Supervisors Contingency. Mr. Brookhart.
We'll wake him up here in just a minute.
Well, this is just the official motion that we discussed at your last meeting. So the Arts Council, every year applies for the Commission for the Arts Grant, and it's always $5,000, and then we match the $5,000 for total 10 for the FY18 allocation. But this year we found out that the Commission for the Arts Grant is being reduced by $500. And so we asked for your recommendation for what you wanted us to go forward with, and you came up with option 3, which is just increase our contribution by 500 to keep their allocation the same at 10,000 this year. And so this is just the official motion to make it.
Thank you very much, sir. Any questions?
No, I just wonder why the county has to pick up what state leaves off. I mean, you know, that's... I don't see where it's the county's responsibility that when the state takes that off, why we pick it up. And I just don't understand that.
Well, I can tell you that I spoke to Del Schaefer, who's, you know, when I was at one of the local plays, and she said, you know, we have an extremely tight budget.
Everybody does.
Of course they do. Yeah, of course they do. But their budget is, you know, essentially keeping them from having the types of shows that they would like to have. They're not organized enough to get better, if you would, from that standpoint. I certainly said that's where we want them to go, but she just made a plea and said, you know, this will have an impact on us, and I would appreciate if the board could make that difference. And I think the $500, you know, when you look at the amount of energy and effort that all of the people put in, you know, to perform these shows, the actors, et cetera, is a nominal additional contribution on the part of the county. So I asked for it. We discussed it last time, and I think we agreed that we would go with option 3.
Yeah, I agree. And they do give free performances. I know the community choir during Mother's Day, they do 2 shows there that's free to the public. And the shows that I have attended, I wish I could attend more of them. They're very, very, very well done. They have chosen some good performers and talent to come here to the county. And I think we're lucky that we have them in the county.
We actually do have a very good venue. I mean, the Live Arts is a smaller venue than...
Well, we've done a lot of work over there.
Yeah,
you know, it's air conditioning and
right.
With the good seats sound. And all with the years. Nice it's seats. Really nice, and I've been over there in different cases mm-hmm. too. Mm-hmm. But I just don't think we need to pick up the tab for the state.
Okay, I mean, y'all talked about this one after I left, so does anyone have a motion?
I haven't. Sure. Is a motion anywhere?
Yep.
Oh, I move. It's not on there, right? I move I move the Board of Supervisors approve a budget transfer of $500 from BOS contingency to the fiscal year 18 Fluvanna Arts Council allocation to cover the $500 reduction of arts grant funding.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. This passes 3-2. Next is XYZ, temporary intern position for Commonwealth's Attorney's Office. Mr. Hazel.
Good afternoon,
sir.
Thank you all for considering this. First, I want to say that this is money that's coming out of the drug forfeiture fund that we have, money that's taken from drug dealers or individuals that the money can be tracked to their drug distribution is where the money came from. The Department of Criminal Justice Services, DCJS, oversees those funds and the rules for that, and they approve temporary hiring. You can't hire a full-time person with drug forfeiture funds because those funds come and go, and they can't supplant county funds, so we can't use it for something that the county has in its budget. I would like to also say this is not something I will do. This is not a summer program that I'm going to have moving forward. This is a very unique situation, and I think it's a great county story. 6 years ago, a young man was in the Blue Ridge Governor's School, and he wanted came to me and asked if he could do an internship in my office. And I had never had a high school student intern. We have third year law students all the time. And I had some qualms about that because, you know, we have juvenile files there. He may know some of the people. They're third year law students that come from Pennsylvania. They come from all over. And a local person I thought might be touching, but I talked to Mr. Morrison, who was running governor's school at that time, and we worked out some guidelines that he wouldn't be involved in juvenile cases, that type of thing. And he caught the bug, both to be an attorney and a prosecutor. He told me at that time he wanted to come back and you know, do an internship in our office when he could. He went off to VMI, worked for 4 years hard there, went to Washington and Lee, and he just finished his second year at Washington and Lee, and this week he got his third year practice certificate from the state bar, which means that he can now try cases. Being that he worked or was in the office for the better part of a year, an entire school year, he knows the office. He was as good as any third year law student I had. He loved it. He was there all the time. He's there now. He's there this summer. He's already been in the office knowing that this may not be approved for it. He didn't ask for the money. I just felt that since he had been here before and I knew that he would be a benefit to the office, and he's just turned 24 and 6 years of college, I thought $50 a day for his services was a fair amount, and the fact that it's not coming from the taxpayers of the counties, I just would ask you all to approve it so that he can have a little spending money when he gets back to Washington late this fall.
Any questions? Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Hazen.
Thank you.
There's no discussion. I'd like to make a motion. Mm-hmm. Okay, I move the Board of Supervisors approve the temporary intern position for Commonwealth's Attorney's Office with funding from the drug forfeiture account not to exceed $2,000.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next. Sleep. A, public's work position changes. Mr. Stevens.
Good afternoon. I am requests a little bit of tweaking within my department's organizational chart. We've got a few vacancies in the department right now. Two right now. There'll be a third at the end of this month when one of our custodians retires. He's worked with the county for going on 40, if not more than, I think, 42 years, and he'll be retiring. So we'll be basically filling three positions.
He told me 19 days this morning, just so you'll know. I told him when he gets down to 9, he'll be a one-digit midget. So
that's like when you're in the service. You only have 25 more days to go.
Absolutely.
As you know, that since I took over this position, I've been trying to update, revise, combine, rework position descriptions to reflect the work that we're trying to do here as the Public Works Department and facilities and BUSD and all the other things that we do. So basically,
you want the finance one?
Sure, yeah. It's a spreadsheet, yeah. Mr. Harris will be retiring. This isn't part of the motion, but I just wanted to let you know that Bobby James, who's been here for about 10 years, is going to be promoted from the grade 7 position that he's in into Mr. Harris's vacant grade 9 position, and then we're going to hire the grade 7 position.
Going 7 to 9 and not 10?
No, sir. There's two essentially custodial technicians. They're called maintenance technicians right now. We haven't really tweaked those position descriptions very much, but there's two 9s and a 7 in the custodial.
Well, you have a groundskeeper here that you have, it looks like, going from 7 to 10, three grades up.
Yes, I'm going in order from the top.
Okay. You're going from the bottom up, huh?
Mr. Harris is retired. Mr. James, we put in his position, and we'll hire a 7. Now we're getting to the part that we're going to ask for some approvals for. I have a person whose current job description is groundskeeper. He's a grade 7, but this gentleman is a certified welder, and he also does the maintenance on our vehicles because he has extensive experience doing vehicle and equipment maintenance. He's been doing it for a long time for the pay that he's receiving, and he's been doing this work without complaining, and he's been doing it well. So as part of the reshuffling that I'm looking at doing, I have two open grade 12 facilities maintenance specialist positions. We're going to regrade one of those to a 10 to make it a more junior position, leave one of them at a 12, hire both of them. We will also propose bumping this groundskeeper position, transitioning into something called a grounds maintenance technician, which adds duties involving maintenance of equipment and vehicles and also certain other
I believe he's the one who made the base for the sign.
Yes, sir.
And a variety of other things. The auction.
He also made the bottle racks for the rescue squad. So he would get bumped to a grade 10. The two open facilities positions, one of them would go down to a 12.
Or down to 10.
I mean, sorry, get down from a 12 to a 10. And then I also have a grounds maintenance worker position and a grounds maintenance one and a grounds maintenance worker two. This is a tweaking of job descriptions to get rid of the old groundskeeper position. One of those would be a 7. One of them would be an 8. And that would actually be a optional bump. We may or may not promote one of these gentlemen from the 7 to the 8, depending upon their experience, the training that they receive or have gotten, and their work that they do. The summary for right now basically is that as of right now today, those 6 positions are costing the county $197,054. After the change, the cost of the county, the proposed pay cost of the county would be $181,771, and the benefits would be appropriate. You'll also be, I guess, more or less reduced by a similar amount to the overall pay. The job descriptions, I believe, position descriptions, I believe, are in your board package.
I think it's only one, right? The technician one, right?
No, they're all one group, Mrs. Booker. So.
All of them, because I was wondering that what was the difference between the technician, saw that one.
Right, so that's facilities, the one that's going to the 10.
Maintenance technician and facilities maintenance specialist.
And then down here, these are the grounds maintenance technician.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, in the lingo of
that's the same one as the one before, except without the red lines on it.
Yeah.
I hope I don't get this reversed and embarrass myself, but I believe a specialist generally has more experience than a technician. So
okay.
In order to differentiate between the more junior facilities maintenance position, we're calling one of them a facilities maintenance technician, and we're downgrading it from a 12 to a 10. Now, there's nobody in that position right now, so nobody's being demoted. We're taking one of our 12 positions and downgrading it to a 10 to basically attempt to meet our needs. I need to have the specialist position, somebody that's greatly experienced, but for the second maintenance technician position, or facilities maintenance. Tangled up here. For the facilities maintenance
position. It's got the wrong
position. You just got the wrong position description, Steve.
No. That one has the wrong header on it because one is grounds maintenance technician and the same thing, it says facilities maintenance specialist in the same PD. There's just a typo in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Stop moving.
It wasn't.
Don't right do here. The, don't
anyway.
Don't do the one.
Right here. It's just this one's grounds maintenance worker right. 2. Grounds maintenance worker 1. But this one here is the one of the 10s, but it says grounds maintenance technician, but here it says facilities maintenance specialist.
Right.
And then the one up here.
That's
is the one that's going to the new one that's going from a 7 to a 10. That's the one that adds skills to it to do the welding, the equipment maintenance, things like that.
Right. So the one that's crossed out says diagnose maintenance problems and recommend how to correct. Who's going to be doing that? Which one of them is doing that?
We're going to have both a specialist and a technician when we get everybody fully hired. The specialist will effectively be the supervisor or at least mentor of the technician.
Okay.
So if the technician presumably would run across something that obviously if he runs across something that he knows how to fix and can recommend what to do, we'd expect him to do it. But the idea would be that the specialist would oversee the overall facilities maintenance and guide the technician to find the correct methods for it. It's It's just a little bit of semantics in there to try to separate the two positions and make it clear that one of them is intended to have more skills and abilities than the other.
And you just approved the same change in finance because you approved a financial financial services specialist, and then the other one is a financial services technician, so that you've got two tiers in there. One was a 13, and one's a 11, one's a 13, I think.
And that's also, we're actually, you know, as we changes and tweaks to things in all our departments, trying to layer some of these positions so that people do have an opportunity to perhaps get promoted. If somebody leaves or gets promoted themselves, there'll be somewhere for them to go. So the facilities maintenance technician and facilities maintenance specialist, and then we're also going to have a grounds maintenance worker one and a grounds maintenance worker two. Mm-hmm. Right now, we effectively only have the grounds maintenance worker one. Mm-hmm. We bump some stuff up. If someone gets their pesticide certifications and things like that and does some of the things that we need them to do to make them more valuable to the county, we would have the option of promoting somebody from the basic grounds maintenance position to a one grade promotion.
I think Mr. Weaver has it.
Yeah.
Go ahead, sir.
On your grade 10 specialist, I see here it says performs or assists in performing billing, maintenance, and repair tasks such as carpentry, plumbing, masonry, electrical, HVAC, roofing, flooring, and painting. I noticed that we bring in, what is it, the CII services that I've talked about in the past. Will any of these overlap, and maybe we can reduce some of those services?
Our in-house maintenance specialist or technician will most likely be more familiar with the more basic repairs and stuff that can be done to HVAC. Now, we're already doing that. We call CII in for major repairs.
Well, that's what I noticed. Our guys have too much to do to
be able to spend the time it takes to completely replace an HVAC system or completely replace an evaporator or condenser. That's the items that we call in CII for.
Yeah, when those bills come in, as you well know, those are pretty high priced, and I'm just wondering if maybe you might be covering part of those to reduce that total amount that we see a lot of times in our bills. I don't know if you're going to be able to cover any of them or not.
Well, one thing, it doesn't have anything to do with this particular subject, but Eric just reminded me, our ESCO project that we're doing does have a major amount of HVAC work to this building. Well, to the schools, definitely. That helps them, maybe not necessarily from the budgets that I'm familiar with. But we expect to have some, well, obviously significant energy savings by that work being done. And then, of course, having new HVAC equipment means less maintenance and repair on it. But I mean, I don't know if I have, at last count, I've been working on a master list of the facilities that the county has. And I'm getting down to the individual, you know, even each picnic shelter at the dog park is going to have its own unique facility number. So that if the roof needs to be repaired, we'll know where to send people. And we're up to over 100
facilities that
this county either owns and takes care of or has some maintenance responsibility for. That, I mean, that includes ball fields, concession stands, and all the buildings. But our building count, just our building count for buildings that have HVAC in them is at 25. So you have to consider that when an HVAC system has a lifespan, expected lifespan of 15 to 20 years, and you've got 25 buildings, you should be counting on replacing about 1.5 HVAC systems a year on average. Which means two some years and one another if you're cycling things through. So the HVAC maintenance and repair costs for anybody that's running 25 buildings is going to be high no matter what you do. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think that we could duplicate the work that CII does for us without hiring at least three more people. And I think that cost alone would, if you add in the trucks that they'll need, the test equipment that they would need, the other things that they would need to actually do HVAC replacement type work, I believe that you would find that we'd pay more for it than the contracting with CII.
Well, and you sure couldn't hire HVAC technicians
for $37,000.
That's not possible.
But don't we do things for prevention of the HVAC, like changing filters.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
Those are the important things, that you take care of the equipment so that you won't have to the person to come in.
The major.
We do that as well. It's the repair costs do tend to run high sometimes.
Right.
Those are more routine things that be there.
We do, yes. but picking up, adding skills to like Mr. Tanner's position and having him expand those skills allows us to not have to go hire a contractor to do all that stuff. A couple of years ago, you approved a change for the folks downstairs in planning that when they go out and do formal surveys using their equipment, they get a differential in their pay because they do surveys rather than us hiring a contractor to come in.
Right.
It's just a more economical way of doing the business. But I agree with Wayne. It would be difficult for us to hire at the salary levels it would take to hire a trained HVAC technician and then to use them across county and school facilities. You could probably do it, but I think the costs would end up being with three or four or five people you need across all school and county facilities, salaries would be really high.
And when you begin doing things like that, you sometimes lose, especially in a small organization like ours, trying to have people that are that specialized. The guys we're looking for, or ladies, for the maintenance specialists and maintenance technician positions, are, I guess, what you used to refer to as jack of all trades, kind of somebody that knows, is a good carpenter, but also knows something about electric and plumbing. And that's not to say that somebody who's a licensed HVAC tech can't also know carpentry, but typically when people begin to specialize that much, then that's what they do, and that's really all they do.
We need people to go out and replace
a simple electrical outlet in 1 minute and clear a clogged drain the next, or replace a drain line and then, reset a circuit breaker and clean a filter on an HVAC to try to diagnose what's going on. And then, of course, if there's a problem, then you call in the specialist for it. That's the type of people that we're looking for to hire as of right now. At the size that we are, I think that's the most bang for the buck.
And then the 7 to the 10 was a pretty big increase that you had asked about, Mr. Weaver.
Yes.
That increase is based on the skill set we've added to that position description.
All I can say about that gentleman is he has never balked at doing anything that I've asked him to do. Since I came to work here, he's gone from being basically sat on a mower to being somebody that winterizes our mowers before at the end of the mowing season, brings them back out of hibernation, and does the main basic services on them in the spring. He does everything from brake jobs to tire changes to tune-ups and sometimes even more larger work on vehicles. And he has always had a good attitude about it. He enjoys doing it, but we are grossly underpaying him based on his value to this county right now, in my opinion. I mean, I know that's a large jump, but I'm going to stand right here and tell you that the position deserves that grade. But in this case, not just the position deserves the grade, but the individual who's in that position also deserves this.
Any other questions?
I don't have any. I'd like to make the motion.
Oh, all righty. Go ahead.
It's a long one.
It's a long one.
You like long motions.
Yeah. I move to approve the following position descriptions changes. Old, facility maintenance specialist, pay band 12, $34,736. New, facility maintenance technician, pay band 10, $31,200. Old, maintenance worker, pay band 7, $25,584. New, grounds maintenance technician, pay band 10, $31,200. Old, maintenance worker, pay band 7, $25,584. New, grounds maintenance worker 2, pay band 8, $26,208. Old, maintenance worker, pay band 7, $25,584. New, grounds maintenance worker 1, pay band 7, $25,584, with the funding to be within the existing FY17 Public Works personnel budget.
Second.
Motion made by Ms. Seeger, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And we save $15,283.
All opposed?
Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Thank you, Wayne.
Thank you.
Next.
Millie's has to kind of start trouble here.
She is stirring.
I was going to say, we spent $500 on staff.
There you go. Go ahead. Stir that. But anyway, let's go to B, Raymond James Contract Addendum for Bidding Agent Services. Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, members of the board, I'm very happy to bring this item back to you again.
Happy.
So probably about 2 weeks ago, like I said, we presented this item to the board already a couple times, and there's been some questions each time we presented it. A couple weeks ago, we had a conference call, staff with Mr. O'Brien, Mr. Eager, and BPSA, our financial advisors and investment advisors on behalf of the county, to discuss some of the concerns and questions that the board had regarding going forward with this transaction for bidding agent services. And I guess before I go into the presentation, whether I do or do not need to, again, I guess I'll just ask for questions first. If there's any questions or any concerns still moving forward with, or if the board wants to move forward with bidding agent services.
I think we were wondering about the change in rates, whether it's going to change in a couple weeks, couple months. How we still projected that.
Well, I mean, as far as the rates go, I mean, like I said, if the board decides to move forward with this, they are setting a net savings level mm-hmm. that they want to achieve
right.
from Raymond James and when they put those bids out. So if you want it to be, $150,000 or $200,000, then that's the net savings amount. And if we don't achieve that through Raymond James and through the bidding agent services, then we always then fall back on then either doing the slugs purchase in July, August of 2018, or either doing some other type of open market securities at that point. So that's really kind of the options, or obviously, or we can do absolutely nothing.
I thought that was what we decided, was that we're going to do absolutely nothing at the time being, because we basically said we had the option to buy treasuries or slugs, right? And that the risk was if the market changes in a negative direction, i.e., the interest rates get lower, right? That was the risk, which I believe Mr. Eager and I both thought that was probably a relatively low risk, but it was for lack of a better word, a way to cover the decision. And that the cost of the procurement process was relatively high, or the bidding agent process was relatively high. And I thought at the conclusion of that call that we basically said, we'll probably just wait and do nothing for the time being. So I'm confused by why we're bidding.
I don't think we made that decision.
Not as a board. This was a conversation that Mrs. Eager, Mr. Eager, and staff had with Raymond James about this proposal right here and what was the pluses or the minuses. Last time we talked about this, the fear was that slugs were something that would not be available to us.
May not be
closed. Right.
The window's closed that now, it'll likely be open next year, but you never know.
Correct. But the fact that the slugs market does or does not close isn't really relevant, because we could still buy treasuries. I mean, the differential between the treasuries and the slugs was so minor that in the environment that we're in right now, you would either set a very high target for them to achieve in doing the contract bidding services, or B, you would just stay and wait, because the consensus was that we probably felt that the risk was low of it going in the other direction, and that the interest rates were likely to increase in our favor from that direction. But certainly, if you want to take the most conservative move to protect the taxpayer, you can do that. But you're paying $25,000 and you're probably going to get less return.
What about that $25,000? Has there been any...
If we were to do this today, the county would probably make about $134,000. And if we do it with Raymond James, we'll only make $75,000, because we have to give them...
Well, we can set a higher target. and so potentially we make more, but either way, I think we were still stuck with the bond council prices.
You think we ought to stay with 130?
Well, the financial bond cost was the same. It'll be less than slugs and things like that.
So we take it now.
But for the float agreement, where they manage it and track it, it would be the $25,000 fee.
So the $25,000 make the difference of maybe whether we would or wouldn't.
It's not just the $25,000.
When we would do it.
There was more than added on to it.
Yeah, it's not just the $25,000. That's their fee for negotiating a contract.
If we use them.
If we use them.
Correct. So right here, this is just one of the fees. Right on the chart here, yeah. In the middle section, that shows you the fees associated with either doing a float agreement, which totals all fees, total about $46,000, or if you go the slugs or open market option, you're still going to look at about $18,500.
What's your advice on this then?
I think it depends on what does the board does the.
Well, I know, but what do you think is best for this county? I know you put you on the spot, but
you are putting him on the spot, and that's a difficult position. And so his answer has to be, you know, take this because it's the most conservative option, and he doesn't want to be held accountable. Ultimately, the decision is to us.
That's not our recommendation.
Okay.
Well, our recommendation would be number two, if you're going to go forward with a float agreement, but set it at a really high bar.
Yeah,
because if the slugs fall apart, you still want something for that fall back on.
Number two is where I stand.
Number two is kind of what I thought some of the conversation that we had, that if you go forward with the bidding agent services with Raymond James, mm-hmm. we set the level at a higher savings level.
Right. And you don't pay them the $25,000 fee unless we go forward and pull that money out.
Unless we that's
not paid for
unless
we do it.
And think that they can achieve that.
And we can set it at $200,000 or $150,000.
Exactly. Yeah, and they probably may say, "Well, it's not even worth doing that."
And you know,
so they'll still monitor the market for us, and they will come back and tell us if they think they can do it. They'll come back and let us know that, and we can tell them to pull the trigger on it. If, for instance, you've set it at 200 net, mm-hmm. net of fees. Now, then you'll have to make a decision: do you want to hedge your bets and take that 200 now, or wait until next summer to see if the open market is available, or the slug open market would be treasuries.
Well,
the slugs market.
The one thing to remember though, with what Mr. Nichols said. So what would happen is if today, if the board approved the bidding agent agreement, the next meeting I would come forward to the board with a resolution, and then you would determine that money. So if let's just say Raymond James has the go ahead to move forward, if they see that $200,000 level, then they would pull the trigger for that transaction. So it's not like you can really move back at that point.
But we can set it such that they can allow us to say go or no go.
Yeah, I mean they could come to staff if that's right. The way that the board wants it.
So let's say you set net value under a float agreement at $200,000 net. We don't have time to come back and get resolutions back and forth from you. You've already set that. Now you've turned it over to us to work back and forth with them. If we get to the point and they say they can achieve 200 net, we would likely go forward because we're going to need to do this within a 24 or 48 hour period of time. If you don't want to do that at all and just sit and ride it out, that's perfectly fine too. But you would not be paying anything to Raymond James on the float agreement just to engage their services to watch the market for us to see if they can get the net $200,000.
Well, you are, you know, it sounds like you're not paying for it, but you really are. Because if you do it on your own and the rate environment is such that we could get $200,000 or more, that all comes to us.
Yes, but could you get $200,000 or more at the same time? The float agreement will not be any good next year. Mm-hmm. I mean, it won't, after the next 2 or 3 months, forget the float agreement because it's not going
to
be as useful as live time would be. Mm-hmm. This is just a hedge against what could happen in the market. If you're comfortable that the market is going to continue to stay level or rise, and if we're reasonably comfortable, we can either get in the slugs market or in the open market through treasuries next summer, mm-hmm. then just go with that. This was only a way to set you aside to have some guaranteed in case everything else fell apart. And yes, when you snap this, when you decide to do this, you're paying those fees.
Right, but you know, when you say the market will fall apart, the day that treasuries are no good, mm-hmm. your dollar bills are no good.
Yeah, true. I mean, if in this case, the floats are really intended to give you a guaranteed cash now.
Because with the float, you get the cash now, whereas if we wait until we close, I mean, we're talking a year and a half.
It's sort of a 74 and 200,000.
It is sort of a moot point.
I'm sure we're going to need it more then.
Right, because it's sort of a moot point, because if you set the target very high, A, they're not going to execute it right now, and then B, if they're going to execute it at the target that we set, it's probably because they think that, you know, there's an opportunity. I mean, it's probably because they think they can make that money right now and we'll lock it in. But not because they think the market's going to collapse right then and there. But no, they could hedge against that, but you know, they'd have to be very astute from that standpoint to do it at that level. So
I would be delighted for the board to choose one of those six options on the board today, on the screen today, so we don't have to do this again.
Yeah.
I think what y'all have talked about is just sitting back and
And either
I understand the position that we're putting you in. You've got to do.
The window will either be opened or they're.
When we ask the question of you, okay? Because yes, we could stand to make more, but yes, we also could have the rug pulled out from under us and not make more.
I don't think you'll make any less than what you're going to make if you do this today.
Yeah, unless the market is really goofy a year from now,
you agree?
It's highly unlikely it's going to be worse than today as far as what we're going to make. So that just happens to the market the way it looks.
I'd say we give no action then.
I think that's right.
Mr. Weaver?
Well, I don't know. Are we talking about option two?
No, we're talking about six or even five. If the slug window is open, we would go that route. But we can do that ourselves. You don't need Raymond James to do that.
I think it's a close call.
Wouldn't you like to make more money for the county?
Mr. Eager's comment was, I couldn't agree more.
Show me, what are we going to make more? How are we going to make more? Tell me what we're going to make.
You won't be paying the, you'll get.
What will we make?
Well, right
the
now,
bottom line,
if
right?
You did it
the
today,
bottom line.
Oh, here.
If you did
what
today,
is the possibility of what we can make?
In this rate
possibilities is limitless. Mm-hmm.
You probably make about $134,000 today
mm-hmm.
if you set this up. If you, but of that $134,000, Raymond James is going to get $40,000 of it.
46.
Yeah. So, why would you give Raymond James the money when you can?
Which
is
not
to clarify, Raymond James isn't getting all 46.
We're
talking about cost.
Yeah, it's going to cost the county $46,000. Why would
we would lose $46,000 compared to losing $18,500 if we went the other direction?
Well, it's not. That's the cost to do either.
Not losing.
Yeah. Right.
That's them giving you money today as opposed to getting the money tomorrow.
Yeah, Raymond James, in the world with the market maybe not looking so good over the next year, this would probably be a really good way to go because you're kind of guaranteeing some money. You're not going to worry about the market going down. If you were getting ready to retire and you were an older American, you wouldn't necessarily want to be being speculative a year from now or 2 years from now if you couldn't afford to do those losses. In our case, that $25,000 is their standard fee for this type of thing, for them to go out and find the buyers our securities in that 150 or 101 day period or 91 day period, mm-hmm. and get it sold now, based on what the market looks like today. If we don't want to do that, let's just stand pat, wait. We'll get you a resolution next spring, summer, as we get closer to that.
Yeah,
and you'll get an option.
So that's option two, isn't it? Move forward with the float agreement.
No. Option three, four, five, and six are essentially what we're doing.
Option one is basically go with the float agreement and just pull the trigger today and get what you get. Option two is more like go forward with the float agreement, but then maybe set a higher level.
You're really doing all of three, four, and five or six because you're waiting to move forward. You might do a float agreement later, but probably not. You might evaluate the option to purchase state and local government securities, the slugs, but you might not. And you might purchase open market treasuries. In other words, you're doing nothing today and reserving your option to do open market or slugs when that is available next year.
See, the big concern.
What would we make? You don't know.
This right here on this chart, Ms. Booker, if for instance, the right today, you did slugs, you make 134, you net gain of $116,000.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If the market goes up 50% from what it is now, which is, I mean, I'm sorry, 50 basis points is
right.
It'd be 183,000. Mm-hmm. If it went up 100 basis points, essentially doubled from today's market, you'd make 250,000.
So that's what we're waiting for.
That's what you're looking to see what the market does next year, and
so you're taking somewhat of a risk. What's the downside?
Well, your market would have to decrease from where it is right now by 50%,
which is very
percent,
okay,
right,
low.
From 0.82 to 0.41. That's not basis points there, and then you would be at the break-even cost if you took the money today.
Right.
That's a big significant.
41 basis. Right.
That means the market changed in a very significant. That means we went back into kind of a depression.
It's our decision.
Right?
Yeah, well, sure.
So that's where that.
So you're thinking that's not going to happen.
Well, I mean,
you know. In other words, we're taking a risk.
Not very big risk.
But it is a risk.
And really the only other
it's really not.
I guess you
huh? I really don't think it is.
One is
you
get money today versus one you're waiting down the road.
And the reason well, I don't think it's a risk is because you have to go down.
Let's wait and move down the road. So
we'll just thank
you. Point table go down. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, your interest rates would have to drop.
They're not going to be dropping.
I don't think so.
No, I don't. They're
going to drop by half a percent. They have to drop by 0.5 basis points, which is a pretty significant move.
Yes.
For now and then. Right?
Yeah, drop.
Because the Fed has almost no room to move, right?
They have been
because the Fed wants to move to room. Room to move because they don't have any flexibility should the market turn negative. So that's why, you know, the push has been to try to raise interest rates.
So according to your chart, we can't make any more than 283,000.
Oh no.
You make whatever the market does. I mean, the market goes above.
We just don't know what the market's going
to
do.
Interest rates have to go up a bit. Yeah.
Okay, so you're just making a prediction.
We're just showing
if the interest rate is twice what it is today, you'd make 251.
Okay.
And you see how low it is today?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. It's more likely to go.
And actually, the conversation we had when we talked 2 weeks ago, the rates were actually higher than what's on there right now.
Correct. Yeah, these are the old slides.
The rates on here, they're a little, they're about a month, almost a couple months
right
old
now.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So we'll table this issue right now.
All right. No. I'll move.
We're
going to table it.
Yes, ma'am. Waiting until next spring or summer.
Okay.
Pull the trigger. Yeah.
Because what we determined was that we could buy treasuries. And that's the thing we didn't know last time. We
could
buy treasuries.
August. Okay.
We'll be looking at the slugs market in March and April.
So once we buy treasuries, the difference between the treasury and the slug rate is very nominal. So it wasn't like you were giving up a whole lot by not getting in the slugs market.
And that was a question we were not sure whether or not it was legal. So it is. So, all right.
Okay.
You corrected that.
Presentations, we have none. So we'll move.
Thank you, board members, for going in and talking.
Absolutely.
Sure, pleasure.
And family.
I think it's the only time Mr. Eagle will ever say he totally agrees with me.
Consent agenda.
Okay.
We're going downhill fast. Next up is the consent agenda. C, minutes of the May 3rd, 2017. D, minutes of May 17th, 2017. E, CRMF FCPS 4 scrubbers, Mr. Breslauer. F, CRMF FCPS. Feel like I'm in that movie with Robin Williams.
Well, there's a lot of acronyms.
Middle school painting, Ed Breslauer. G, FY17 FCPS Families Learning Together Supplemental Appropriation, Mr. Breslauer. H, FY17 FCPS Title. BIB, Supplemental Appropriation, Mr. Breslauer. I, Temporary Staff Stipend for Additional Duties, Twisdale. J, Accounts Payable Report, April 2017, Mr. Dahl. Anyone want to pull anything?
Well, we know what I'm going to pull.
Mr. Dahl, please step to the podium.
No.
I almost said that before I even asked.
Oh, Mr. Dahl.
No, an Accounts Payable Report on there. I just had a... had a question on that. $492 on the accounts payable.
You said $492?
Yes.
Columbus sailed Ocean Blue.
Yes.
Oh.
I'm sort of curious on there. This is concerning the trash, the maintenance contract on that. For example, this month it was $1,446.
Wow.
Then you come on down, and I know they're sort of two different things. The convenience center. What is there some way you can consolidate? Where do they take that trash? Republic Service has that, but where's that taken then?
Yeah, I don't know what trash that is. Do you remember, Mr. Stevens? The Republic Service's trash, is that one of the dumpsters at the community center? Or is that other trash service that do for us?
Republic Services, people take the trash and they don't use it. So it's
oh.
What is it?
So they're the folks that haul the trash away from the convenience center. So should we should we move that line to the convenience center line?
Under the convenience center, it says BFI.
Yeah, BFI under there. That's what I wonder if we can get a connection there.
We'll check and see which the Republic Services one. I guess it's possible that may be a like a. No, we don't have any has waste like the medical clinic next door.
And they maybe go around to the schools and all pick up.
No, it wouldn't be on here because we wouldn't see that on this accounts payable.
I mean, the county does have dumpsters.
Yeah.
I mean, so obviously we're not paying for dumpster services. I mean, there's one.
Yeah. Well, right out here.
But I'm just thinking about whether some of that could be consolidated and we could save some money maybe there.
If BFI does them, have them do this here, I guess it's possible. We'll have to see what the contracts are on those. We'll let you know at the next meeting.
Okay.
There may be separate contracts where they're on different sequences. One drop, we could combine them potentially. We'll find out what they are.
All right.
Very good.
Any others?
No, I'm ready for a motion if there's not.
Go ahead,
my gosh.
Mr. Chair, I move to approve the consent agenda. C through J, with the accounts payable and payroll, be ratified for April 2017 in the amount of $2,985,973.59.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. Weaver, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. We are now on to unfinished business, VRA, financing review, Zions Cross Roads Water and Sewer Project. Mr. Dahl, back at it.
Back at it again. Okay, so at the last board meeting, the board and Mr. Nichols, and then we all talked about, we showed some comparisons for, I think it was the 15 and 20 year rate. So we came back showing 6 million, 7 million, 8.5 million, and then the 8.5 million that we submitted to the VRA for the application. And then we did those different amounts of 15-year rate, 20-year rate, and 25-year rate. And then we also put in there, hypothetically, if the rates were to increase 1% between now and, July, August
time. This is the sheet that's on the screen now that you have in front of you that you also got by email earlier this week.
Yeah. I see this one a little bit better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll bet.
So, I guess I'm going to make it a little smaller. I guess let me go to the presentation okay. Really quick.
Oh.
Okay, so just a quick update here. So just a recap, we submitted the VRA application May 1st. We requested $8.5 million. The county just got approved for that loan request just this past Friday. The Virginia Resource Authority Credit Committee approved the county on that. So today, for June 7th, we're just to talk about the different amounts, terms, options. If the board chooses to move forward with the financing, at the next meeting on June 21st, the board would have to adopt a resolution, which would basically state, this is the maximum amount we want to borrow, this is the term that we want to go with, and this is the maximum rate that we would allow for this transaction to execute at. Because even though the rates may be, let's just say they're at 3% today, you would be adopting a resolution saying we're going to approve the financing to move forward, say it's 3.5% like that. And if it goes above 3.5%, if that's what the resolution states, then we would not move forward with the transaction. So that's what the resolution would show. And just to recap, the debt would be issued in August. So we got about a couple months, month and a half. There would be interest-only payments in fiscal year 18, and then the first full full principal and interest payments would be in 19. Fiscal year 19.
Okay.
We had talked about that we kind of preliminarily have about $4 million that we kind of earmarked to maybe use as some cash set aside for the project, but that can change, you know, like I said, depending on what loan amount the board decides to go with. And then the current running project estimate is $10.2 million. So this slide here is basically your chart there, but it's consolidated down more, where it just shows the debt service, total debt service, average annual debt service, and then the interest rates for all those options. When we look at, if I remember correctly here, so about every $1 million we go up from $6 to $7 million. I think the average debt service, and if I remember correctly, went up about $60,000-$70,000 for average annual debt service. current rates, you know, we're right around on the $7 million, we're right about 2.95%. And when I sent this chart out to the board, the rates have gone down since we kind of started this process back in March. They've gone down, I think, about 25 basis points since we kind of started this process a couple months back.
So, and that's good.
Mm-hmm. So if that trend continues, that'll be very positive for the board and the county for this project.
Why would it continue?
Why would it?
Yeah.
Oh, just because whatever the market does.
Looks like in the future, we're just talking about financing earlier. Looks like the market's going to be going up.
If they do another rate increase sooner rather than later, maybe. But they said there were going to be 3 or 4 rate increases this year. But now they put it off all the way through.
Right.
And they only did the one. So if the next one doesn't come until October, we're under that, and the market may still be down in interest rates. So being in the pool, in the summer pool, is going to be good, because I don't think we'll get the...
I do, too. I think it's good in the summer.
So just looking at the 15-year rate currently, the rate's around 2.58% on a 15-year, 2.95% on a 20-year, and 3.26 on a 25-year. And then we obviously put in, what would happen if the rate goes up 1%. The very bottom yellow is what we submitted to the Virginia Resource Authority is that $8.5 million amount.
That's the max we would get out of that, because that's what we put as the top nine dollar value on the VRA financing.
So we don't really have any formal recommendations or approvals that are needed today, but it would be nice if the board maybe had a direction that... Because what we're going to do, we're going to have bond council create a resolution. And there's some things that we could leave in there, like what the amount is, or maybe what the rate threshold is. But it would be good if maybe they had if the board had an idea as far as what type of term they want to go with. And even if they maybe had a dollar amount, too. But like I said, we're not holding you to anything here today.
So term, 15, 20, or 25 year?
I'm the 15-year-old guy.
Like to do 15.
Yeah, get it over with, get it paid off. I mean, just rather than drag it out.
See, I'm entirely the opposite. I mean, you're never going to see money this cheap again, probably.
You'd be broke.
No, hear me out. Just hear me out. So you're probably never going to see interest rates at this level. You're talking about long-term infrastructure, so that you're spreading out the cost over that period of time without real risk behind it. And then the other component is you've got the use of your money, right, is going to be more expensive to do things tomorrow than it is today. So the fact that you don't have to pay for that money now makes it cheaper in the long run, right? And then when you look at the fact that we will when additional revenues come through, we always have to pay the prepay, right? And the differential on these interest rates, I would at a minimum do 20, if not 25 years, is my opinion on that. So... And your end on top of that, while you're increasing the overall long-term burden to the taxpayer by the total debt level, that's assuming you don't pay it down faster, you're decreasing the current burden on the current taxpayer. Right. So that's why I would not rush
to that. I believe Mr. Stevens said he would not go past, he suggested not going past 20.
Said no more than 25.
Mr. Stevens preferred 20, but 25 is not in the realm of reality.
Okay.
But I would prefer
20. 20, I knew 20 was the right amount.
And then the second component of it is, I think given the level of our fund balance, you know, I would encourage us to borrow more than less, just so that we have more room within our fund balance. That's my opinion.
So kind of if you saw the fund balance report, kind of where we stand right now, we are at roughly about $4.8 million above our reserve amount for what could be used for, well, we could sit there and do nothing, or it could be used for projects, you know, just like this. So as it stands right now, let's just say we're moving forward and the project's going to be $10.2 million. If we use, you know, $8.5 or $8 million, that's not cutting into that full $4 million fund balance amount. So, like I said, that's for the board to decide what amount they want to move forward with for borrowing.
Yeah, if you did the $6 million, you basically have almost no fund balance left at that.
The $6 million, we're tapping the fund balance out. I mean, we're still above our threshold and our reserve level, but it's gonna make it low. You know, for any future CIPs
and
projects.
And you said, we already had 8.5.
Well,
we were approved, but we could change.
So you could buy an $8.5 million house, mm-hmm. but you don't have to buy a house
right.
that expensive.
Okay.
Yeah, we can go down to 8, we can go down to 7, right. but they did the underwriting based upon the $8.5 million. Okay. That's kind of what we submitted because we had anticipated putting some cash into the transaction, mm-hmm. but just from that level depends on how much more was.
Right. The first thing I marked was $7 million in 20 years. No.
Yeah, and that one's good. I like the $8 million in 20 years too, because what I'm thinking is if you pull $2 million out to add to it, then you've got a little bit over $2 million left in the fund balance, but you also have the slippage of time for the construction project, and if you want to do any extension on it, you've got to think of those dollars. So somewhere between the $7 million and $8 million, you just wouldn't want to do too much less than that, I wouldn't think.
Yeah, I think you're gonna need more room than less room. So
I think so too. Yeah. We're already pushing up against, you know, contract cost increases because of the labor and materials are not getting cheaper, and there's a lot of competition out there for hiring construction contractors.
Yeah, I could go for 20 years. I don't like it, but I think
that was the first thing that I thought about. Was
we've got $7 million
and 20 years.
20 years.
Yeah. Now I also
it does give you flexibility and leaves you some in your reserve.
If we do 8. If we did 7.5.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you do 7.
And we can do 7.5 too. I just don't have that
number. Yeah, yeah. Right. We can do whatever we pick.
But let's assume you do 7. Assume, and I'll be pessimistic, assume the project's going to cost $11 million. Mm-hmm. Right now, you're working estimates 10.2. I'm going to add a little wedge to it. Let's make it call it $11 million. Well, that means you got to pony up $4 million in cash, mm-hmm. if you only took $7 million in financing, mm-hmm. and you will not have any fund balance. Yeah. Now, we'll rebuild it a little bit with revenues and things, but just don't go below 7. But no. I would encourage you maybe end up towards 8.
Yeah. Likely there will be some other borrowing need somewhere down the road, and it won't be of the same length and or time.
Yeah.
And so it will cost more money. And so the more flexibility we have in terms of the fund balance, I think the better off we are.
This is
a long-term debt, and it's a long-term, you're putting a pipe in the ground, and it's going to be there for a long, long time. So you don't have to worry about the fact that it's going to be, you know, used up in 15 years. It's going to be there for a long time. It's going to service our county for a long time. So it's appropriate to have long-term debt with it.
25, I think, is what Mr. Stevens said was
getting to the edge
of the. You might have to replace it.
There are pipes probably in Charlottesville that are 100 years old right now.
Well, let Fred put those in the ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mr. Stevens, when he was talking more about a lot of the mechanics.
Well, he wrote the contracts for the construction.
Get close on the 25. But I'm not going to pinpoint the board to an amount.
That's a good point, though. Think about it, though. If we're talking about 25, the bulk of our costs are, you know, the pipe. This is on ZXR because we have a couple of pumping stations on that.
No, you've got the wastewater station, you've got the water pumping station, and you've got the tower.
And what? Oh, and the town. What's the typical life of a tower?
A long time.
Yeah. So in your 25-year assessment, right, just saying you wouldn't go beyond that.
Water storage tanks, usually about 50 years.
Storage tanks, 50 years. And then so these other components.
15 to 20 on the mechanical components.
And how, what's the sort of.
And then 50 to 75 on pipes. Now, yes, there are pipes in the ground that are more than 100 years old, but sure. In almost all cases, those pipes have been in the ground too long.
Think Flint.
And if, and if somebody had been properly budgeting for recapitalization of their system, they would be working on replacing sure. those lines. One of the problems that utilities, and in fact, you know, transportation departments and everything else have all over the country is that they build things and then they go, oh, great, we got a great new bridge, we got a great new water system, and then they walk away and they don't set aside any money for recapitalizing or depreciation, if you will, on those systems. And if you are extending your terms for the initial construction out too far, then your replacement starts to overlap when you're still paying for the initial right. system at the same time that you're needing to replace major components.
No, I do understand that. I think my question was going to be, out of the total amount of money that we're spending, the $10 million, if
how much is it for the mechanical stuff?
For the mechanical stuff, what percentage of that $10 million is the mechanical component that would be at risk of replacement?
35%, probably.
35%.
Something like that.
Okay. So you're talking about 34, but...
34.
Okay, 30.
So that's the only point that I want to make is that it's not the full $10 million.
Well, that's
why it will be 34% of it we're paying for.
25, right. Because you've right. got components that are going to last longer than that, and you've got things that are going to last shorter
right.
than that.
Right,
and it.
But your concern is at year 22, all of a sudden we need to spend $200,000.
Well, and also, right? when you're paying down the debt service, you're paying X dollars of money out, and so you're less likely to be able to afford to begin to fund the future reconstruction of these things. So the sooner you get it paid off, if you're disciplined anyway, then the sooner you can start using at least a portion of that money that you were using for debt service as a set aside for the replacements that you know are coming up. And I don't know of very many municipalities, localities, authorities, or anybody that actually discipline themselves well enough to do this. That's why all over the country, you hear about valley infrastructure, you hear about taxes having to take a huge jump because they've got to do a giant infrastructure project, you hear about rates taking a huge jump because we've got to go out and replace all these lines, whereas in effect, if you had been setting aside money all along.
Oh, sure, and I totally understand and agree with that.
You would have an MRR fund, the kind of fund we're trying to set up for sure. some of our facilities here. It's the same principle for these type of utilities projects. So the longer you extend out the payment, you know, paying for the system, the less likely you are to be able to get budgeted for a substantial amount of money to put towards future replacement.
So is there consensus on 20?
That's my guess.
I personally think that's a good middle ground.
20. Consensus. 20.
And I would recommend, I've heard banding about borrowing less and less. I mean, sometimes you run into things when you're constructing and your construction costs don't tend to come down from your original estimate. They tend to go up. So I would recommend borrowing as much as you're comfortable borrowing and then having that, what are you calling it?
Cash cushion.
Cash cushion to cover any increase that we may experience from field conditions as we start constructing things.
Mr. Stevens, let me just ask you one other question. If the differential of $67,000 on the $8.5 million between the 20 and 25 years, if that $67,000 would be put into MRR, would that change your decision making as to whether we should do 20 versus 25 years?
Sure, absolutely.
Except you can't commit the future boards to that.
The problem.
You could pay you swear out.
Well, I thought we just had consensus that we were going to do that. Yeah. Right? We're going to pay for things. So.
Well, I mean. Mr. Nichols makes an excellent point. I think one of the reasons that localities don't have it is just an inherent part of the process. One board cannot burden another board with the debt. They can certainly make strong suggestions.
We burden them on that.
And try to educate them on the wisest way to run things, but you can't make them use the money for right. a certain
And there is one last difference that I'll make, and I'll shut up after that. I have to be quiet after that. Is the unlike I promise. I do. You take that one to the bank. the one difference between this type of debt and say the debt for the schools is, you know, this is debt that's being put in place to generate income. You know, schools, I'm not saying that they don't serve their purpose. Of course they do. They educate our children and they are of tremendous value to our community from that standpoint. But they're not going to generate income from us. So, you know, you should think of this debt as an investment, not as a depreciating debt, which I think is what you have to do.
You are correct. Strictly, there's no question about that.
Strictly from the standpoint of economic development or taxes, the schools are a quote burden. Now, obviously, you're making an investment in something that can't be measured in cash when you work with schools. But yes, this type of project, there's no doubt about it. We're putting those lines and that tank and those booster stations in line, in place up there to try to allow this county to generate economic development, to have businesses and industry coming here that will hook up to it, use it, and start paying taxes without generating school systems.
You know, we'll get real estate taxes. With the business, we'll get business personal property taxes, machinery and tools.
Mm-hmm. Sales tax.
You're going to end up with the same amount of money in 10, 20, 30 years.
Gosh, well, I hope not.
I hope not.
Mr. I'm going to
You and I talked about that.
I'm going to come to heaven and tell you that you were wrong, Don.
Yeah.
You should be thankful she said because she had to go someplace else to find you.
Yes. You never know about those things.
Well, you might never find that Puzzle.
We might be in heaven, but it was still here.
Did you hear that, Don?
No.
You might be in heaven. She might be in heaven, but you'll still be here.
Right. There you go. Still be fighting one.
Like that country song, we're going to prop him up beside the jukebox in that chair.
So, consensus on 20 year?
20.
Okay, what dollar level?
7.
8.5.
8.5. After you're listening to all.
Listening to both of them, I was at 7, but I'm thinking 8.
Yeah, 8. I don't want to.
Anybody
want
to make
8 and 25, going once, going twice.
8 and 20.
8 and 20.
So, we'll get paperwork prepared based on the 8 and 20, but you will have the ability to, if it will give you updated numbers next time, but you'll have the ability to adjust that in the motion if we need to. But what you're going to do is you're going to say at a maximum interest rate of, so what would you like to see a maximum interest rate of, Eric?
Yeah, that's the next thing. Within that resolution, you're going to have to determine what, let's just say rates go up, you know, 50 basis points from you know, let's say they're 3% today and they go up to 3.5. Mm-hmm. What's the board's
4% or
I would go at least 4.
Four.
What did Raymond James say?
Did
they say it? They've usually gone about a point and a half up above what we've had in the past.
Mm-hmm. So you're saying 4?
I would say at least 4, maybe 4.25.
I mean, if you look here at the 20-year, I mean, we've got the 295 to the 397.
Because the rates will be what the rates will be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you look,
if on the 20-year, if rates went up, you know, 1%, we're looking at another, you know, roughly $50,000 for that annual debt service.
57.
So what do we say? Is that
8.24.
You can't read that.
8.24 and a quarter.
You don't have
it's got Brian sitting over there and all that ugliness on my.
Yeah, well, you're supposed to go once a year.
Oh, except the interest rate, we don't have to. I mean, if you have something in, then we can plug it in, but we can change it another 5 if you want.
Maybe more than once a year.
Could you live with 4.25?
Yeah.
To give yourself some wiggle room?
Right. I can.
Or 4?
I'd like to stay at 4.
Okay. So.
The only thing that you do there is you have to go with the 15-year if you're going to do something like that. That's what that would trigger. So,
so 8 million, 20-year, 4% max interest rate. and we'll come back with you, the resolutions at your next meeting, and any follow-up from bond counsel or finance advisor if they've got any other recommendations. Thank you.
All righty. Thank y'all. All right. Any new business? Okay. No new business?
Yeah, I just wanted to bring something up. Regional jail. I was looking over how well the other counties used their visitors. And we use ours the least amount of anybody. We had, I think, it was 68 hours this last time. And the other four jurisdictions.
The road crew?
Yeah, they're using them a lot more. That's on this recent report that I got. So I just wondered if we can, you know, we're saving money if we can need them and use them.
We take them anytime we can get them, Eric.
Did you hear what he's talking about, sir? Talking about the use of the road crew.
The road crew, we haven't turned
them down. I have never turned them down. They're supposed to be equal.
Yeah, it may have been a weather anomaly, whether it was our week or the rain week.
I mean,
we had some nasty weather.
It's split between all
five. It was a monthly report, anyway.
Yeah, we'll definitely take it as much as possible, sir.
He just said our use was much less than everyone else's.
We can ask him that tomorrow.
Sure. I had it marked.
There you go.
The other comment I had to make was, have you noticed Papa Jim's ice cream place and the carport is up on the side?
It's an elegant solution.
It looks really nice.
It looks really nice. It's still nice, really good ice cream.
A lot safer.
So that's still what I'm good ice cream. Lot
your beard
safer.
Still growing too, right?
And shady up there too, not all in the sun. So I thought that was good because a lot of people thought that we were doing something evil, but after they understood
any child that had gotten hurt close to the road,
right,
you would have heard it in spades.
Yes. Yes.
So right. It's a good move and it works out well.
Very well.
Very good. Alrighty. All right. Thank you very much, folks. All right. We will now move to our second round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board should come to the podium and state your name and address. Please remember to keep your comments to 5 minutes on topic directed to the board. Anyone wishing to speak at this time? Okay. I will now close the second round of public comments. Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to the provisions of Section 2.2-3711A1, Personnel Matters, Section 2.2-3711A3, Real Estate, Section 2.2-3711A.5, Prospective Industry, Section 2.2-3711A6, Investment of Funds, Section 2.2-3711A7, Litigation. Of the Code of Virginia, 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing personnel, real estate, prospective industry, investment funds, and litigation.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are now in closed session. All righty, Mr. O'Brien, get us back in session.
He hasn't memorized this thing.
Mr. Chair, I move the closed meeting be adjourned and the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved with supervisors that the Board of Supervisors does hereby certify that to the best of each member's knowledge, one, only public business matters lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements under Section 3.2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended, and two, only such public business matters as were identified in the motion by which the closed meeting was heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Okay, we have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. Ms. Seeger.
Aye.
I'm sorry, ma'am. I caught you in being cheap. Mr. Weaver's aye.
Spoken.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We're back in session. Can we get a motion to extend?
So made.
Second?
To 9:30? 9.
Midnight, you could do it, too.
9. We got a motion made for 9, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Mr.
Two quick things. The email from the DPI family about the error quality of the warning flags. I have some measure of experience with this because we had them on every military base all around. We always had the air quality warning flags. It was mostly because we were out PTing and you couldn't run during red flag days because of the air quality.
No kidding.
we will never have a red flag day here unless you have a big forest fire. So while we could definitely do this, you could find the flags, buy the triangle flags, figure out which flagpole they're going to go on, it would never stop the question because somebody would say, well, you didn't change the yellow or you didn't change the green, or why don't you have it at all the schools? Because this is just a start. Now, I'm not suggesting we can't say, let's do this. It's a great idea. But it is not just as easy as just pop a flag.
I agree with you.
There's five different color levels for air quality, and this is the United County. And I checked the state website, and there's been no website, no air quality.
Go into it.
If they don't have them in Virginia Beach, we shouldn't have it here.
Right, and there are only two places in the county that have listed any air quality problems. All the rest of them are in the blue range, even the beach where you've got industrial activity.
Say the beach in Northern Virginia.
And so anyway, we need to acknowledge it back to them because they sent it to me, copied all of you, and they're asking for you to adopt that policy. I'd be worried on what flag to put up and where we go from then. And we'd have to then track it.
They don't have the authority then to dictate that, though.
No, this is just a family request.
Yeah, that's a request.
They made a real formal that is requesting that our county display an air quality flag.
They must not have anything else to do.
All the way down to, you know, to red.
If they had a comprehensive plan that came up and said, here's how we would, you know, do the flag and who would maintain the flag and maintain the air quality, they wanted to use, say, the flagpole at Pleasant Grove. As long as the county doesn't have to spend time and energy to do that, then we'll let them use a flagpole, then let them have that.
We'd have to go by there every day to check it, wouldn't we?
No. We're making it their problem, not our problem.
Every time a citizen makes something their problem, it becomes our problem, like the flagpole.
Yes, because then everybody else, then somebody else in another community is going to want to know why we don't have one in that community. They won't know why we don't have one.
Oh, yeah, and that's your problem.
Maybe
what about the rocks that you have over at the library around
right.
That circle?
Oh, yeah. I like those. It's easy.
Yeah, you like no maintenance.
All righty. Mr. Smith.
This is about the
Columbia and Cunningham schools. We got a preliminary assessment back last week. You should get the final results mid next week. But the schools came in third and fourth, meaning they're not going to be viable for senior affordable housing.
Oh, okay.
And we've confirmed with the market study folks, we've confirmed with PHA. PHA's not backing out of the planning team, but they are saying that they would get the state tax credits and grant funding.
Mm-hmm. So those two sites are not viable.
Right.
The two top ones,
the first site, the best fit is going to be Village Oaks, which is already zoned for senior living in a community center.
Right outside the main gate of
the new development.
The new subdivision, that's always a plan to put senior housing, subdivision, and then a senior independent living facility there too. It's zoned for that, approved for that.
Some time back too.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
About 8 or 10 years ago originally, and then two years ago, I think they redid it and updated it.
They're just isolated. Going back to the schools.
Okay.
And the second site that seems viable, at least, would be the 45 acres that's for sale across the river here. Just because it's in on our village and there's more amenities.
Right across from EW's?
Correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Motion to adjourn.
Second.
Motion been made to adjourn by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We're out of here.